Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite, student, teacher to student, and right back at the seat. All play the role of student to teacher to student at various times in our lives. And I'll tell you, it makes it so interesting when you allow yourself to be the student and you allow yourself to be the teacher. That's what it's all about. I mean, you can't miss if you do it like that. We welcome you this morning to our show, Handling Frustrations When Life Does Not Seem to Work. Handling frustrations when life does not seem to work. I'll tell you, it's been a pleasure to host this show for White Apple Institute and to have all the special co-hosts, one of them that will be following this show this morning, Nazim Rashid, and his show Reconnected. And we certainly look forward to all of you joining us and being part of listening to the show. So many of you write in and tell me, I listened to the show, I really got something from it, wanted to say something. Sometimes the switchboard lights up so much it's really hard to get to everybody, but I really appreciate the fact that you are there. And, you know, this actually wasn't the intended show this week, because last week we had so many technical difficulties, it was difficult to get on line and get to you last week. And so this morning, I heard a voice inside, which I choose to call God. And I'm telling you, that voice told me, talk about the frustrations that you felt last week when you were trying to get online. Because those are the same frustrations that people experience when they're starting a new job, starting school again after a long summer vacation. And some of them not for a long summer vacation. Some of them have been working and doing productive things, some people. And but as far as getting right back into the swing of fall semester, especially for many of you college students out there, it can be beyond stressful as far as, you know, what stress does to your body. I mean, I mean, there are books, large books that write about what stress can do to your body. And everyone encounters stress in one way or another, but let's talk about stress as the frustrations that lead to stress first, okay? And we won't get real complicated with physiological stuff, in other words, the body and how the body works, but just that you know that we're going to assume this morning that you know how important it is to keep your frustrations down, okay? And so the topic today is handling frustrations when life does not seem to work. And the description of the show this morning is that life processes, like any machine in our world, needs maintenance and ongoing care. Excuse the typo there. Life processes, like any machine in our world, need its maintenance and ongoing care. Now, life processes, I'm looking at as a machine. And with the machine, you have to keep it maintained and you have to keep it cared for. However, there are times when the machine still does not work, even when you maintain it and take care of it. Especially when you're talking about at school and work projects, and they become in trouble, even within the first week of school. Listen to a few cues this morning from myself, Professor Applewhite, and some other co-hosts and teachers and employers that have been invited to join our show, and of course our many, many wise students and parents out there and other listeners. And remember, our show is every Saturday morning. You'll see the show description. And know that we are doing our best to avoid technical difficulties and come online. So let's talk about technical difficulties for a minute and what that really means. Because I'll tell you, when it happens, and as I tell my students many times, I don't want to hear those stories about the tech dog, the technology dog ate your paper. I'll tell you, it happens. It ate my paper last week. And I had to laugh and think about the many times that students have come in to me and said, wow, I don't have my paper. I really did everything I could to save my paper, and it just didn't work. And you know the difference, listeners, between someone who comes in with that kind of reason for not having their work done versus the continuous excuses that you hear. See, there's a difference between the two. And the frustration is going to be there for that person that has lost either a paper or lost a work project or an important paper that maybe human resources, the employer gave you to make sure that you turn in the paper on time. And you've lost it now. So what do you do? Well, one thing you do is don't look for an excuse. State the reason and say, I'm sorry, and do your best to get it done as quickly as possible and turn it in. Because excuses never work. But what's the difference between excuses and reasons and the level of frustration? Well, I can tell you right now, as some of our callers can tell you, is that there is a large difference between the frustration between a reason and an excuse. When you're prone to making a lot of excuses all the time, you forget. It's almost like telling a lie, okay? You forget about what you said the last time, like the student or the worker whose uncle died last month and then died 3 months ago, the same uncle. You know, that becomes an excuse that can't be justified. However, if you have proved yourself to be a good student, and I mean a really good student, a student that tries, you don't have to be an A-plus student academically, but one who tries, and you try to be a good employer, then a good employee, and you get your work done, then it is really difficult for the employer not to look at you and see that you are making excuses. One moment here, and I think Tom Baker is coming online, and we have another caller here coming on air. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Good morning. This is Maria.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. We're talking about a really interesting subject here. And I believe that a lot of people are going to get something from this because we're talking about how we handle the frustrations of life when life does not seem to work. And we're talking about all, like the reasons and excuses. That's where I was going right now is what is the difference between a reason and an excuse? Now, I'll repeat that over again just once so that everybody gets the difference between a reason and an excuse. The thing that that gets me is that people who have integrity, okay, don't need to make excuses up. Because they already know that they've tried their best. But when you haven't tried your best and you're just looking for an excuse for your teacher or your employer to say, oh, okay, well, what uncle died this week or what aunt died last month. It seems to be the same person that keeps dying over and over again, and that's why you can't seem to get to work on time or classes on time. After a while, those excuses burn out. Reasons don't. I guess that's one thing I'm trying to say. After a while. And maybe you can give us your opinion on people that are always making excuses up about why they can't go to school or be successful at work. Do you know anybody like that? We have another caller coming in, too, while you're thinking about that. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. You're on air.
Yeah, this is Tom Baker. One thing about excuses is they come often, you know, like, for example, 2 weeks ago, Tuesday, I was legitimately sick. I've been working here 2 years. I never called in sick before, so they're likely to believe me. But if you call in every other week sick, they're going to, either they're not going to believe you or they'll think you're not healthy enough to do your job.
It's a very good point.
And excuses are, you know, like your father died, your mother died, whatever. A lot of times people, if you use it more than once, even if it does happen, they're not likely to believe you. You know, so you try to give a legitimate reason and don't call in with excuses often.
And I think, Tom, you hit the nail right on the head. I think you've got the right word there. It's about frequency, about how many times do you miss an assignment? How many times do you make up an excuse, and you're always looking for some kind of excuse that you can give for being excused from a situation or being excused at work or excused at school? After a while, you're right, it gets old. And so I think that's what the employer or your instructor uses as a way to know not really serious. What do you think, Maria?
Well, yeah, I know somebody he makes excuses to go to work, but it's because he has a problem. You know, they like to be lazy, okay, and I'm not trying to put anybody down, but some of them, they have alcoholic problems, habit problems. So what happens is, I don't have to go far away. I'm sorry, I'm going to give you my real my brother's, okay? He drinks, and he has a good job. He does sanding floors. It's a good, very good job he has. And he has a problem of drinking. And because of his problem, he will come home, and he will have to go to work. Either he will send his workers to work for him, or he will have to get up all almost not even not even sober, and he will go to work like that, not being really sober, but just coming home at 3 o'clock in the morning and expecting to be up about 7 o'clock to go to work or 6 o'clock. So, some of them, they have bad habits, they are drinking problems, they got marriage problems, so it goes to a lot of problems that everybody has in life. So some of them it could be just being lazy, that they don't like working. Calling on the job and say, okay, I'm sick, and that's a good reason because they are sick. What they're saying is true, but some of them, they lie. Okay, I'm sick, I don't feel good, blah, blah, blah. and they don't want to work, and then make excuses.
Right. They're sick, and they don't have they don't really have a reason to be sick.
Right.
This week and next week. And I like your example, too, of people who just have bad habits.
Yes,
just have bad habits, like the person you were mentioning.
It's my brother.
I'm going to hold on talking about lazy for a minute, because that's a good concept to come back to later on. But I wanted to focus a little bit on alcohol and drug addiction when that becomes a frustration for people not getting to work. Now, even though we have many, many programs out there to help people that are dealing with alcohol and drug addiction, we have to be careful of recognizing that these are diseases. Even though we, our society as a whole looks at them and says, well, just put the glass down, put the bottle down, put the drug down and get your life together. It's not that simple. In order to put something down that you've been doing for a long time and you've developed a bad habit and it starts feeling good to you. Your body, your whole mind gets used to feeling this feeling and you don't want to get rid of it. So the only way that you can get rid of it, and this is with any addiction and with any habit, is that you replace it with another habit that is good for you, beneficial for you. Okay? So you're right. You're absolutely right. People have very bad habits, some people, who lose their jobs constantly behind those bad habits. But then sometimes, I know you're going to say, come on, Professor Applewhite, we don't want to make excuses for these people. And I promise you I'm not. But there are sometimes reasons associated with these bad habits that need to be addressed before someone goes to work. And that is if they have an addiction, they need to take care of that before they go to work or before they register for classes.
Right.
Do you agree?
Okay, they have to do what?
They have to take care of the addiction, the bad habits, before
How they can do that?
There's a good way to do it. Now, here in Arizona, actually in the United States, we have community resources, okay? And in just about every country, they have some kind of community resource, except in countries that are doing very, very economically very badly right now. But most of them have resources that you can go to and you can get some help with your addiction and your addiction to alcohol. Sometimes we're not addicted physically. Now, alcoholism is a disease and drug addiction can be a disease as it affects us in our bodies. But there's also psychological reasons why we continue to do the same thing over and over and over again, no matter how non-productive it is. And so those need to be addressed from a mental health perspective. Truly, there is a mental health issue that can be associated with people not having the motivation to go forward. And that's why Apple Institute. Go ahead.
Okay, so let me ask a question. Let's say somebody that works every day and they have a problem drinking, so and they come to work late, or so what can if I'm his boss, what can I do to help that person? Or because if he keeps coming to work late or whatever, so are they going to fire them? Are they going to help them, or they're just going to fire them? They don't even care about that person. Are they going to, I don't know.
Good question. Very good question. Unfortunately, in the state of Arizona and a few other states, they have what we call right to work, and that means they can fire you for any reason at any time.
Okay.
However, if it's a large corporation that is in many different states, like when we have Ms. Hunter on who works with Toyota, and her company is not under that rule specifically, they don't want to enforce that rule. they go through the process, which we call kind of like a grievance. We allow the person, first the manager, the supervisor, or the instructor, who write a note saying that this is what's happening and it's affecting their performance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then at that point, a committee or someone of authority should be looking at that, not complaint, but that situation and saying, okay, how can we help this person so this person doesn't have to be fired from work and doesn't have to quit school or have to quit school or both.
Right.
So that's what their job is supposed to be. And then when they're doing that, at the same time, they're inviting that employee or that student in to talk and to find out what is it that we need to do, because we see here that you've missed, you know, on an average, a one day a week for the last 3 months. Okay, and an instructor can do the same thing. Well, what's the problem? You haven't turned in any assignments.
What?
Instead of just dropping them, you're right. Now, I'm going to finish that part, and then I'll wait for your next question, see if you have something else to say to this. Then, after all of that is done, the responsibility that we have as consultants and counselors and teachers and that kind of thing, that kind of level, is to help that person find resources. Not to find them for them, but to help them find resources that can help them with their drug addiction, with their drinking, with their bad habits, whatever those habits are, that are not helping them produce. And especially when we see somebody who's had, and I know you know people, and our other listeners out there know people who have worked, you know, in the last 5 years, they've held 10 jobs or 15 jobs, okay? And they're always jumping from one job to another, and there's always an excuse.
Right.
About why they're not working anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So does that answer your question about what's supposed to be done in a world that cares?
Yeah, that's good, though.
Okay.
To be able to help somebody, people that have those problems.
Right. And we have a lot of people that have problems now because of the economy. And then when we talk about employers have problems, too, because they have to keep producing so that they can sell the product that they're trying to produce to stay in business. So if they have somebody that's always, you know, looking for an excuse not to come to work, that means that there's a person or many persons in their employment that are slowing down the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can't produce and sell items the way they want to or get the food at the restaurant table because all the waitresses and waiters are taking days off. Okay? The teacher can't continue to teach the same class over and over again because students keep coming back and forth and missing the information. So something has to be done to help out with that situation and help that person handle frustrations when life does not seem to work. Tom, any agreement that you have with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I was going to make a couple points here. One is for employers. If you see a person, let's say they worked for you a long time, and you see them kind of staggering and smelling like alcohol one day, don't just assume that they've had something to drink. Sometimes diabetic people, when their sugar gets too high, smell that way. That's one thing I wanted to add.
And, very good point. Very
and
good point.
The other thing I wanted to add is it's not really, it's kind of tangentially related, but I'm an alcoholic and I drink near beer. And I remember I started a job in the first 4 days. I was drinking near beer before I went to work. And then it dawned on me that I might smell like I've been drinking beer on the job. So don't even drink non-alcoholic beverages that smell like alcohol before you go in. I don't know how many people do that. but I know I did.
Well, near beer is, I believe, a non-alcohol beer. Is that right?
Right, but you smell like you've been drinking. You smell and taste
right.
Like
and so, I mean, that can apply to so many things. I appreciate you bringing that out, especially about diabetes. In the near future, we hope to do a show on diabetes. And we have a young lady who wants to come on and talk about juvenile diabetes and how it affects the future of many young people. So I appreciate you bringing that up because it gives us a chance to talk about how things can be misunderstood. And especially... when we're looking at people who are physically and visibly, that means we can see them, that they are disabled, as such, they're in a wheelchair or they use a cane or walker or whatever. And we see them staggering or smelling like alcohol, that we can make an assumption one way or the other. We can say they may be diabetic or they may be drinking. And I find a lot of times that because of this being in a situation where people say, oh, well, she or he is disabled, they overlook it and excuse it. And there is no excuse, again, for being late for work, for not producing in school or work as an adult learner, as any at any level of being a student or an employee. So I hope that our listeners out there understand that disability is not an excuse. It just gives us all of us, because everybody has a disability. It gives us all an opportunity to see a reason for recognizing our limitations and adapting to those limitations. In other words, understanding them and finding another way to do something. Last week, I watched one of our staff members, Tom Baker, as he was fixing something in the office. And I was so amazed at his tenacity, at his perseverance. He just kept going and going and going at it as he could not stand up to reach a certain thing, to move an object. He kept contemplating on it and thinking about ways that he could do it. And he found a way to fix what he intended to fix. And that's what I believe truly a human being, a productive human being, is all about. It's making choices to adapt to the situation. Go ahead. Another question? Now, I wanted to bring out something here on laziness. Okay, let's just talk about laziness for a minute because, wow, boy, that deserves its own show in a way. What is lazy? Is lazy truly the willingness not to work? Okay? Is laziness a bad thing? We say it's a bad thing, but why do we say it's a bad thing? Anybody got an idea or a way to define what they would call lazy? And I will read to you what Webster says on lazy.
Lazy to me is not being willing to do things and not putting your whole effort into something you want to do. That to me is laziness.
Well, you're not too far off from what Webster said. Webster says it's unwilling to work. Now, I want to break that down a little bit. He says unwilling to work, moving slowly, sluggishly, you know, lazily. Okay, so... a lazy person is a person unwilling to work. Now, defining work is a way of using your energy to produce something so that you can, well, let's just break it down to eat. Right, Maria? You got to eat. Everybody's got to eat. And, right, and many people look at their family as a way of eating and getting through this world. Well, work defined by Webster, and let's just take both of these and just see what we come up with here for some of our listeners out there. And thank all of you so much for calling in and listening in. We see you out there. We know you're there, and we certainly appreciate you. But work means performance, getting some kind of performance, doing some kind of job or putting out labor. And keep that word in mind as we talk about this concept of lazy. And exerting yourself in some kind of something, you know, some kind of accomplishment, putting forth an effort. And I like putting forth an effort more than probably any of these things, is that because there are people who truly cannot work a 9-to-5 or a night job or a day job and get a check every 2 weeks for whatever reasons. But that doesn't mean that they can't do something, that they can't put out an effort to help around the house. I've heard stories of people who live with their relatives or friends and live truly off of them. They come over, they're looking for one house after the next to eat food there, and they don't clean up. They don't put out any effort to help or to balance out. You know, I ate a plate of food, so in some way I'm going to put this plate of food back in your refrigerator by mopping your floor or washing your dishes or doing something around your house. There are so many people that don't do that. Now that fits into this definition of truly lazy or not wanting to work. Are we clear, listeners out there, that volunteers work? Is there any question about that? Volunteers do work.
Well, one point I wanted to make about being a volunteer is a lot of times, if you can't find work in a dead economy, you can volunteer somewhere, and if you're showing up on time for your job, and maybe even showing up a little early and getting your paperwork done, and you're not leaving early and you're doing a really good job, then the employee's going to look at somebody who's coming in 5 minutes late every day, and you might get that job. So, and I've had volunteer work turn into paid employment for me. You should treat it like a job. Many places even interview their volunteers now, many professional places. Also, it's a little off the tangent, but another thing you can do to get a job, since that's the ultimate goal for most people, is like if you work at Jack in the Box or someplace like that, and they say we don't have anybody, say, I'm willing to work on call. And if you call me and somebody's sick, if I possibly can, I will go in. And you can get a job that way, too.
That's a very, very important part. I mean, that's so much information, listeners out there. I hope you've written that down because a lot of people are out of work right now. And I know when I speak this way or Tom, when we talk to people, they're still shaking their heads and saying, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to do that. But listen, things are going to get worse before they get better right now in our economy. And we know that our President Obama is doing the best he can with what he has. And I don't want to get into a political discussion about that. I'm just saying I don't know how much he has, but from what it looks like, he has a lot on his plate. And I certainly wouldn't want to be in his position. But I will say that there have been decisions that have been made for generations now in the White House that have affected us now in this day and age, in the year 2010. And so now we're going to have to, again, just like we tell people who have visible disabilities, that they have to adapt to life. That means they have to change the way their life runs normally. and change it so that it works more beneficially. Well, that's the same thing for someone who doesn't have a visible disability, okay, and they seem to be able to walk and speak and do a lot of different things. And we need to make sure that we are aware of how to adapt. And that's what you brought out just now, Tom.
Yeah.
Is the way we adapt is sometimes we just have to take that volunteer position. And taking that volunteer position is you know, it's worth its weight in gold, because I'll tell you what, when the right employer is looking at your resume, and yes, that does go on your resume, a lot of people don't know that, volunteer experience is a resume item and looks very, very good that somebody would work in their field, that loves their field enough to work in their field for free, well, without money. Because you do get something. You just don't get any money. You get a lot of rewards. You get to meet people that are in your field. You get to be around resources. And these things are very important when you're trying to get somewhere in this world as far as success. And the same thing with school. Another point, Tom?
Yeah, I was going to say, I heard about a guy who was, and it would work for anybody, but this one guy had gone to jail and he couldn't find work for 6 months. So he went, and I know a lot of people aren't willing to do this, but he had a college education and a good grade point average and everything. And he went to, in the middle of the summer, he picked a hot day, not the hottest, but a hot day, dressed in a suit and a tie, held one cardboard saying, sign saying, I will work for job, for food and a job. And then he had another sign clearly written that said what his qualifications are. He got a call the next day, and the day after that, he had 6 interviews. He selected the job that he that sounded the best, and they didn't even ask him. He was in advertising, and they said, anybody smart enough to think of that, I want to employ. So sometimes you have to think outside the box.
Wow, wow. Now, you talk about adapting. I mean, that's a great story. I have not heard that story before, so we really appreciate you sharing that with our listeners. Take some of these ideas out here that are coming up, listeners, and don't forget them, because that was a great example of not only imagination, being creative, you know, putting out the effort, as we talked about before when we define work, you know, putting out that effort, and, you know, we appreciate you returning to our call. By the way, some of the callers have just come back in again, and if you at any time, if you want to say anything on the call, you can always ask to break in at any moment and share your thoughts. Or you can use our chat line, which is up now, and discuss some of these issues. We have about 15 minutes remaining on our show this morning, and I just can't get over this guy. And I have to say, I'm willing to look at sending that information out to our students about how they can actually present themselves to human resources. Even on video, I've sent some very interesting CDs with video presentations of a person, and they sent them over to human resources, to employers. When a class is hard to get into and a professor is overwhelmed with trying to select the right student to come into a class, it's important to also, there's nothing wrong with sending a professor your qualifications in a resume format and a letter of introduction. Nothing wrong with that, okay? Remember, we enforce the school-to-work issue here at White Apple Institute. And through our radio show, we hope to reach others and spread that information that there are ways to get hired. And it doesn't mean the traditional way of just filling out an application and walking away. If you really want a job, do something like Tom just shared with us. Wear a sign. Wear a sign, right, Tom?
Right.
It doesn't have to mean that you sat out in the heat with a suit on or have your qualifications hung around your back. There's different ways of doing everything. And you can even put out flyers for yourself. When you want to sell something, you put out a flyer, right? And remember, when we're looking for a job, we're trying to sell what? Our skills. We're trying to sell our skills.
Oh.
Go ahead.
That reminds me of another point is business cards at Kinko's are very cheap. Mm-hmm. And you can give out business cards with your name and number on it to your friends and pass them out in different places. And sometimes you can get a call from that, too, as well as flyers.
It's a very good point. In addition to that, there's free cards available, at least the first 500 through Vista. And I'll just have to put in a free plug for them, and hopefully that one of their people will listen to this and make a donation to White Apple Institute to continue our work. Because they do have free cards out there that you can get and actually put in an advertisement for yourself. You could put your picture on it and put a little bit of information about yourself. And it's great for single moms because we can put all the information in a short letter to an employer about what their needs are for childcare without even having to go through the interview process, which can be very lengthy today. Instead of going through all of that, know whether an employer is open to the fact that you have two or three kids and that you're not going to let that not, N-O-T, back to excuses again, not going to let that interfere with you producing. And we find a lot of young mothers, no, we find a lot of mothers, period, young and supposedly mature, that use children and childcare as an excuse, and that is not tolerable. What's tolerable is that if you have a reason, and of course the school shut down or whatever, but you have to find backup plans. One babysitter is not enough. You have to have another babysitter. And as a single mom myself, I had backups because I could not allow my class to sit there waiting for me to come in, and then the school running around crazily trying to find a substitute to teach my class. So I'm not saying that hasn't happened, okay? I'm just saying I did my best not to let that happen on a very frequent basis. And we were talking about that earlier, frequency, right?
Okay. But I have a question, Ms. Abba. What if you can't find a babysitter? What do you do?
When you can't find a babysitter, then you can't find one, and then that becomes a reason. Go ahead.
I have a suggestion here, Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Get a job in child care. Work 40 hours a week. A lot of them will give you half-price child care. You can take your kids right there. They're on the job. Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't... I mean, the pay's not particularly good, but it's got good benefits. And when you consider half-price child care, it really adds to what the paycheck would be.
Yes, exactly. That's a very, very good suggestion. And also, if somebody is interested in early childhood education, as I mentioned to students constantly, stay in your field of interest. So if you're interested in child care and early child care development, then you should be working in an environment like that anyway. Because why on earth would somebody hire you to work in child care when the last 5 years you've worked in a fast food environment, okay? Or you've worked in an environment that's totally unrelated to what your so-called interests are now. And so unless you're doing a major career change, which still requires that you put in years, some time into your past career, okay, so they're looking at that. They're not looking at the person who's been jumping around from job to job and has an excuse for why each one didn't work. They're looking for people who can talk about, this is what I can do for you. Because employers need people to produce for them, and that's how they get their money to pay your paycheck. okay? So we have to continue to keep remembering that. And let's not forget, I hope you've gotten some cues here from us about handling these frustrations when things, life, the process of life doesn't seem to work. I want you to remember that the first thing is that you keep yourself calm, okay? And know that everyone can encounter stress, and it can be good, it can be useful. I use it all the time. I use stress when I'm getting ready to give a speech. I allow the stress to come in a very good way because it keeps me on my toes. And so people tell me all the time, well, you sound like you're so relaxed and you're doing so well. Well, I make the butterflies in my stomach fly in formation. In other words, we all have butterflies in our stomach, things that make us feel really nervous. You know what I mean, Maria?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And so what we do is we have to breathe a certain way. We have to think about good things and the benefit of what we're going to do with our nervous energy, you know, and make these butterflies that are in our stomach relax, okay, so that emotionally we feel better, okay? There's different faces of stress, okay? You know, work in itself produces stress because it plays such an important role in our lives. It's the way we eat. It's the way we live. Okay? And some people place that much emphasis on school because school is a way that leads to work or they're going on at the same time. And so here you have an individual that's really frustrated about their schedule and overworking. And I'm finding that a lot, aren't you, Tom?
Yeah, I am, too.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing hours like 60, 70, 80 hours a week. That's two jobs plus the time to prepare for jobs. My goodness, my friends, only 168 hours in a week. That's it, no matter how rich or powerful you are. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's all we get. And if we are working most of those 168 hours, we're not getting the proper sleep, which it leads us into the negative side of stress and anxiety. Go ahead.
I don't think I like the word stress because there's people that work really hard, the doctors that do this and that, and I don't know. I think they should. I mean, all of us should work in an environment that why life has to be so stressful? Why do we have to work stressed out? I mean, I don't think that's even healthy for our minds or our bodies.
Go back to the thing I said at the very beginning, that everyone encounters stress, and there's good stress, there's negative, and there's positive stress. So let me tell you another stressful situation. The birth of a child is stressful.
Mm-hmm.
A wedding is stressful, right?
Right, yes.
Okay, so is that negative or is that just good jittery energy? You see? So the stress that's negative is the stress that I'm talking about, okay? You know, when you're working and you're constantly buying things that you can't afford, that creates that negative stress, okay? Just like a very good friend of mine told me some time ago, she said, I never even knew I was poor until I moved away from where I was living at because
mm-hmm.
Mom always had food on the table and we
mm-hmm.
always had fun. But then when she got away from the situation and looked around at the world and compared where she grew up with other people, then she started to realize, wow, I was in poverty. My family was poor. So see, stress is about the way we perceive it too, the way we look at it. So that's a very good point, Maria. Thank you for bringing that out. It's not always bad. Sometimes
okay.
It's a good thing.
Okay, the problem, I mean, okay. is that I don't understand why. See, okay, I understand the stress, but why is it that we, in other words, our employee is working, and sometimes they say, "Oh my God, I have so much work that it's pathetic." So why a person has to work in such a stressful situations? I don't think I will even appreciate that, to go to work and find myself that I'm so stressful just to work, just to go to work. I hate that. I don't think I would like it.
Yes, and you know, you have a good, you have a good point there, because why do people work so hard and become so stressed out? I just
yes.
Another very good friend of mine just died because of stress, massive heart stroke.
Exactly.
Okay?
I mean,
because of her mortgage, because not being able to pay her mortgage. Okay.
Why?
Oh, I was going to say, sometimes if you get a job and you find it too stressful, and, you know, it's a high-stress, high-paying job or whatever, sometimes you can find a job that pays a little less without the extra stress, you know. Sometimes that can happen, too.
That's right, Tom. And so as we begin to close the show now, can you hear me, Maria?
Yes.
Yes. As we begin to close the show now, what I'd like to ask all of us to do for a moment is to just focus on why we are so stressed in our lives. That's very important. To think about as we begin Monday morning or Sunday, whenever we all go back to work for the next week, why are we so stressed, and what is it that we want so badly, that we give up our health for, that we give up time with our children and our families, and time to laugh and have joy? I think you have a very good point, Maria, and I thank you so much for your comments. For all of our listeners out there, and with 1 minute remaining on the show, Professor Applewhite wishes all of you and the staff of White Apple Institute wishes all of you much love and peace. And we'll continue next week, as a matter of fact, with part four on the developmental issues. Tell your friends and have them call in and tell other people. Share your comments and listen to what we're all talking about to help the world change into a more positive place. Thank you so much. Much love and peace.
Bye. Be sure you listen to the radio show next week. The number to call into is 1-646-727-3758. Thank you very much for listening. Bye.